Shane Murphy in the house. Not really. Do you guys mind if he was in here, you know, whenever he felt like dropping by?
Why would we
have we can have like live in and out breaks, live music.
Yes.
Huh? That'd be amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. But then there's this matter of paying him though.
Oh, right. You know. He doesn't seem to mind.
Love your game. Welcome back. It is hour number 4, Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690 with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo until 7 o'clock.
Yeah, we've got Life After the Game, 7 to 8 with Darcy Lynch. His guests tonight, Darren Turcotte and former Habs Stanley Cup winner Kevin Holler.
Kevin Holler, 93 Canadians. Michael Farber knew them well.
I'm just going to leave it, guys. He likes to hear himself talk, so let's leave it. It was 4 days ago.
Okay, so that would be now, 5 days ago or 6 days ago? Sidney Crosby responded, Eugene Melnick calling him a whiner. And
I appreciate the passion of Eugene Melnick, and I appreciate him wanting to defend his team, but just a little bit off base with the with his post-injury comments there about Mark Messier.
And that, of course, is former Hab Mike Johnson. It's been a while since we were able to have Mike Johnson on the show, now writing for The Athletic, TO out of Toronto, and also part of the NHL Network. They found it. What did he say? It took him about an hour to find similar slashes by Ottawa defensemen, much like the one that injured Mark Messier by Sidney Crosby. We are going to Michael Farber with us every Monday, just off the set of the reporters at TSN headquarters in Scarborough as he slowly makes his way back home to Montreal. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. We got baseball coming. I know you're eagerly anticipating that. We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second. And we'll get to Markov and the Canadians. But how about this Eugene Melnick, no relation?
Well, the question is, who's the bigger whiner? Sidney Crosby does his whining on the ice when he whines at all. And he's not as bad as he was when he came into the league. Melnick, he chooses his spots and whines publicly. And I can understand him being upset. This is a very different Ottawa team without Mark Messier. He was an extremely important player and really one of the linchpins of a team that could win a round or maybe two in the playoffs. And without him, it becomes that much more difficult. But really, Melnick went off the deep end because the NHL has allowed those, you know, love taps gone bad for too long. The reason players do it as often as they do is, well, you don't want to slash the sticks now because the sticks break and everybody sees that and the referee's arms go up. When you do it on the hands, you might get away with it, and quite often you do. So there was an injury. Is that suspension worthy? Well, we didn't see that in, say, 2011 when Zdeno Chara shoved Max Pacioretty into the guardrail, as it were, around the penalty boxes, and there was a broken bone in Pacioretty's neck. So even no matter what Mark Recchi said. So do you penalize the foul or do you penalize the result? It's something that Stefan Quintal and player safety is still wrestling with.
Bill McCreary was in. You've done the Cummings Center for Seniors annual event. They've gone 14 now, and they honored Mike Bossy and Andre Dawson yesterday, and Joe Leonoff for all of his work in the community. Sure. But Bill McCreary was there, Hall of Fame referee, and he referred to the play, and this is what made me think of what you just said about Pacioretty and Chara, as a hockey play gone bad.
Yep.
Now, the old-timers out there will probably, I'm going to try to channel what they're thinking right now. Back in my day, we had gauntlets that would protect the fingers.
So we're blaming the victim now, huh?
Why not?
Well, it's not right. Me and Crosby had quite a week. We had a little Sopranos-like spearing in Buffalo, and then, you know, that slash in Ottawa.
Okay, I was trying to figure out where you were going with the Sopranos reference.
Well, I went up a couple octaves.
Yeah, okay, I'm thinking Tony Soprano and the opposite.
Yeah, no. There was nothing with Ryan O'Reilly, you know, in a cement overcoat. So, so it was quite a week for Crosby. I remember the first time I saw Crosby. It was down east. I was doing a story on him for Sports Illustrated. They played in Halifax, and then they played in Sydney. and then they went back to Rimouski. And when I finished this little trip, somebody, I think from our office, called, and he said, is this guy the real deal? And I said, listen, I don't know if he'll ever win a Hart Trophy, but I can guarantee you one thing. He will never win the Lady Byng. Hmm. He was a tough little guy then. He wouldn't stand for anything. I mean, he created his own space because Sidney Crosby was the focal point of the league. He was the focal point of every defensive plan, and he protected himself. I mean, he was angelic off the ice. He was the kid dressing in a nice suit and saying yes sir and no sir. Knew how to handle himself. He was trained from the age of 15, and he knew how to handle himself on the ice. The larger question is, what will the NHL allow? And until there's a crackdown on that kind of play, which happens, what, a half dozen times in a game, then these things will happen. And unfortunately, it happened to one of the steady defensemen of the Ottawa Senators.
We all know who he is, and the guy is just a whiner beyond belief.
All right, so as NHL owners go, we don't often hear publicly from owners, unless they're gathering together, Board of Governors meeting, stuff like that. There's nobody approaching Eugene Melnyk. Like, it's like the Drapo Maloof report response. Like, whatever happened to that forensic report into Matt Cook slicing up Carlson's Achilles tendon?
Well, occasionally you hear from owners, and going back to Pacioretty and Chara, Jeff Molson wrote a public letter saying how disappointed the Canadiens were and Canadiens' fan base, and he was doing it to protect his player and play to his base, as it were, because the people in the city were outraged, as you might recall, in March of 2011. We hear from Ted Leonsis, the owner of the Washington Capitals, who was forthright and principled in a stance about players on the Capitals being allowed to play in the Olympics. I visited with Leonsis on this week, and he didn't want to revisit that because I don't know if just his choice or maybe somebody's thrown some shade on him. Just to be quiet until this thing is resolved. I do think his position has created a big problem for the NHL, one that Gary Bettman will have to extricate. Imagine if your team has to play the Washington Capitals with Ovechkin and Backstrom and say Braden Holtby, and the next team after the Olympics or during the Olympics doesn't have to play the team against those guys. What you do is essentially create imbalance, and you threaten the integrity of the game. So there are larger issues here. But Leonsis, we've heard from with some frequency. But you're right. You don't hear from James Dolan. You don't hear from ownership. I used to hear from Ed Snyder once in a while, but not too often.
With Michael Farber every Monday after 6 o'clock on Melnyk in the Afternoon on TSN 690. As you can imagine, we spent a good chunk of the show discussing Andrei Markov having the night of his season so far, maybe a couple of seasons, maybe even longer than that, in beating the Ottawa Senators 3-1. Both Markov and Weber badly outplayed, I thought, Erik Karlsson on Saturday night. And they have very quickly become one of the top defensive pairings in the NHL.
And you wonder why it took so long. I think the reason for that is Weber's going to play monster minutes most nights, and you want to manage Markov's minutes a little bit better. So while people might be unhappy with Michel Therrien, I think, guessing now, that would have been the reason that Markov wasn't playing with Weber right from the start. Yeah, it's nice to see Markov. I know some of the people who were involved with his rehabs, and the dedication that Markov showed to his craft and to getting better is absolutely remarkable. And for that, he deserves credit. Look, he's a quiet guy, and I think that's hurt him perhaps because people don't really know him for someone who's been here, seemingly forever. He's probably not as well known as Andrew Shaw, for example, who hasn't been here a full season. But this is Markov talking to the fellow who handled PR for the Russians during the World Cup. He was telling me this week that Markov was quiet even then, even among the Russian players, he was not an extrovert. He kept it pretty quiet. But my goodness, what a nice smile that we saw from him on Saturday night.
I find it hard to believe that we will see Andrei Markov as a member of the Montreal Canadiens in a lesser role than the one he's serving now, Michael. I see him as the type of defenseman that the coach presumably called Julien for the next few years, and presumably with the Canadiens inking Markov to one more contract, he's still going to play his 20, 21 minutes because he's smart enough to do it.
Yeah, you love the way he bisects defenses with his passes. That's what's always stayed with me, how he's able to break down defenses with that. Yeah, he plays as much with his head as he does with his legs. And 20, 21 minutes is great. 24 minutes, 25 minutes.
Too much.
That's not so good. So you have to manage him. But I see no reason why he can't play as late in his career as Nick Lidstrom played. Maybe not Chris Chelios years, but certainly Lidstrom years. They play similar styles, really.
Well, I was a little hurt by it because, my greatest years were in Montreal, but when I realized that Bob Gebhardt kind of engineered that deal, I understood why. He knew he was catching me in the bullpen before he became, an assistant GM. He knew my makeup, and he had told me that the Twins, even though they finished last in 86, the one thing they were lacking was a closer. And from what I hear, he was the one that told Andy McPhail, go get Reardon.
Oh, it's so good to hear Jeff Reardon's voice again.
Wow.
It's been a battle for him, as you know, and he is coming back to town to pay tribute to Tim Raines, who will be honored prior to the Blue Jays-Pirates exhibition game on Friday night. That ceremony will begin a little after 6:30, so try to get your seats a little bit earlier. Here we are again. This is what? Year four of this, Michael? Is it four? Or?
Yeah, year four by the carpet-bagging Toronto Blue Jays.
The carpet-bagging Blue Jays?
Yes,
it's like a baseball love-in. What's wrong with this?
Baseball imperialism. The Toronto Blue Jays are the British Empire and show up on Groundhog's Day, which happens to be in late March or maybe April 1st every year in Montreal, pat everybody on the head in the first game. You get to relive your Expo fantasies. And by the second game, well, we're on to the business of the Blue Jays, and you're just part of Blue Jay Nation. Never forget, this is a franchise that voted in favor of contraction. What's it say on our license plates? Je me souviens. Why do we forget the fact that the Toronto Blue Jays were not the Expos' friends when they counted? Now, some people have longer memories than others. Some people carry a grudge longer than others. But I think if you're of a certain generation, and yes, I know Major League Baseball says, oh, what nice people. They come out in droves to the Olympic Stadium, and boy, that augurs well for a future franchise in Montreal. But as you know better than I, that there's still not a stadium, and unless you can tell me who the owners are going to be today, I say there's no ownership group.
I would love it. I mean, I played, I played for seven organizations, but Montreal actually was really my best years. And, we came to one game from the World Series. I had my 5.5 years there. And someday I want to be able to tell my granddaughter, Emma, that I played for Montreal. If they don't have a team, she's going to think I'm lying.
Well, to wrap it up with Michael, of course, people will not forget that. However, do you not also see it as long-suffering and long-starving baseball fans who shared an experience to get together for a weekend and do it all over again? And at least,
it's a cri de coeur, but at some point we don't want to deceive ourselves that, this is proof to anybody that Major League Baseball is coming back, and we want to feel that way, and it's great we feel that way for a couple of days. And I have to ask you, did you talk to Jeff about Phoebe Reardon and getting booed?
Oh, I told the whole story. Yeah,
you did.
I did.
Well, there you go. And Jeff's nickname was Yak Yak. He didn't have a lot to say, but I'm sure you pulled it all out of him. And you imagine if his back had been better.
No. He set that one straight too.
His back was fine.
His back was eternally creaky. People forget that he was also warming up in the bullpen.
Yep.
And they. Oh man, let me see if I could find it. Oh, I'm sorry about this because I wasn't planning to. Well, here's the
question. That was Lauren Cromartie. He came up with the nickname Yak Yak, and I'm like, well, why are you calling me Yak Yak? He says, you never talk. So that name stuck until the Terminator came, and actually in 81 I was warming up along Rodgers. They never said I wasn't going to pitch, and I thought he was warming up for the seventh game or for the first game of the World Series. When the umpire came out and he gave the sign for the guy with the beard, well, we both had beards. And I started to walk in, and the umpire, I think it was Bruce Frome, he said, no, he don't want you, Jeff. He wants Rodgers.
Yeah. So there you have it.
Okay. It's wonderful. And I don't have time to tell my story about the late Jerry Krause and Andres Galarraga, but we'll do that next week, okay?
All right. Always look forward to talking to Michael Farber every Monday after 6. Have a great week.
You too.
Bye-bye. And boy, if you missed the conversation with Jeff Reardon, of course, you could find it on our podcast page. Everything is podcast as soon as this show is over, tsn690.ca. It was last week, and he did go on to say he understood why at the beginning of an inning that they would bring in Rodgers because he was the hottest pitcher in baseball. But he was definitely available. There was nothing preventing Jeff Reardon from coming into the game that day. Said she was a Baptist, now you're getting baptized. What's the sports business news item of the day? That's easy. Lauren Rubin of Paramount Financial Services next on the Raiders moving to Vegas.
BMW Laval is about people. People like you. The customers who visit the dealership and purchase the vehicle they've always wanted. That's why your BMW Laval service team has the perfect early bird promo. $60 tire storage if you book your appointment between March 15th and April 14th. Visit BMWLaval.com to book your early bird appointment today. BMW Laval, the winning experience begins here.
Experience the magic and warmth of Il Forneto on the banks of the Lachine Canal for over 30 years.